Littlefinger smiled. And I won't even tell Lady Catelyn. Catelyn. My lady, you should have sent word of your coming, Sir Donald Wainwood told her as their horses climbed the pass. We would have sent an escort. The high road is not as safe as it once was for a party as small as yours. We learned that to our sorrow, Sir Donald, Catelyn said. Sometimes she felt as though her heart had turned to stone. 6 brave men had died to bring her this far, and she could not even find it in her to weep for them. Even their names were fading. The clansmen harried us day and night. We lost 3 men in the first attack, and 2 more in the second, and Lannister's serving man died of a fever when his wounds festered. When we heard your men approaching, I thought us doomed for certain. They had drawn up for a last desperate fight, blades in hand and backs to the rock. The dwarf had been wetting the edge of his axe and making some mordant jest when Bronn spotted the banner the riders carried before them, the moon and falcon of House Arryon, sky blue and white. Catelyn had never seen a more welcome sight. The clans have grown bolder since Lord John died, Sir Donald said. He was a stocky youth of 20 years, earnest and homely, with a wide nose and a shock of thick brown hair. If it were up to me, I would take 100 men into the mountains, root them out of their fastnesses, and teach them some sharp lessons. But your sister has forbidden it. She would not even permit her knights to fight in the Hand's tourney. She wants all our swords to be kept close to home to defend the Vale. Against what, no one is certain. Shadows, some say. He looked at her anxiously, as though he had suddenly remembered who she was. I hope I've not spoken out of turn, my lady. I meant no offence. Frank talk does not offend me, Sir Donald. Catelyn knew what her sister feared. Not shadows, Lannisters, she thought to herself, glancing back to where the dwarf rode beside Bronn. The 2 of them had grown thick as thieves since Chigan had died. The little man was more cunning than she liked. When they had entered the mountains, he had been her captive, bound and helpless. What was he now? Her captive still, yet he rode along with a dirk through his belt and an axe strapped to his saddle. Wearing the shadowskin cloak he'd won dicing with the singer, and the chainmail hauberk he'd taken off Chigan's corpse. 20 men flanked the dwarf and the rest of her ragged band, knights and men-at-arms in service to her sister Lysa and John Aaron's young son. And yet Tyrion betrayed no hint of fear. Could I be wrong? Catelyn wondered, not for the first time. Could he be innocent, after all, of Bran and John Aaron and all the rest? And if he was, what did that make her? 6 men had died to bring him here. Resolute, she pushed her doubts away. When we reach your keep, I would take it kindly if you could send for Maester Coleman at once. Sir Roderick is feverish from his wounds. More than once she had feared the gallant old knight would not survive the journey. Toward the end he could scarcely sit his horse, and Bronn had urged her to leave him to his fate. But Catelyn would not hear of it. They had tied him in the saddle instead, and she had commanded Marillion, the singer, to watch over him. Sir Donald hesitated before he answered, "The Lady Lysa has commanded the maester to remain at the Eyrie at all times, to care for Lord Robert," he said. "We have a septon at the gate who tends to our wounded. He can see to your man's hurts." Catelyn had more faith in a maester's learning than a septon's prayers. She was about to say as much when she saw the battlements ahead, long parapets built into the very stone of the mountains on either side of them. Where the pass shrank to a narrow defile, scarce wide enough for 4 men to ride abreast, 2 watchtowers clung to the rocky slopes, joined by a covered bridge of weathered grey stone that arched above the road. Silent faces watched from narrow slits in tower, battlements, and bridge. When they had climbed almost to the top, a knight rode out to meet them. His horse and his armor were grey, but his cloak was a rippling blue and red of Riberon, and a shiny black fish wrought in gold and black obsidian, pinned its folds against his shoulder. "Who had passed the bloody gate?" he called. "Sir Donald Wainwood, with the Lady Catelyn Stark and her companions," the young knight answered. The knight of the gate lifted his visor.
"I thought the lady looked familiar. You're far from home, little cat."
"And you, uncle," she said, smiling, despite all she'd been through. Hearing that hoarse, smoky voice again took her back 20 years to the days of her childhood.
"My home is at my back," he said gruffly.
"Your home is in my heart," Catelyn told him. "Take off your helm. I would look on your face again." "The years have not improved it, I fear," Brynden Tully said. But when he lifted off the helm, Catelyn saw that he lied. His features were lined and weathered, and time had stolen the auburn from his hair and left him only grey. But the smile was the same, and the bushy eyebrows fat as caterpillars, and the laughter in his deep blue eyes.
"Did Lysa know you were coming?"
"There was no time to send word ahead," Catelyn told him. "The others were coming up behind her. I fear we ride before the storm, uncle." "May we enter the Vale?" Sir Donald asked. The Wainwoods were ever ones for ceremony.
"In the name of Robert Aaron, Lord of the Area, Defender of the Vale, True Warden of the East, I bid you enter freely, and charge you to keep his peace,"
Sir Brynden replied.
"Come."
And so she rode behind him, beneath the shadow of the bloody gate, where a dozen armies had dashed themselves to pieces in the Age of Heroes. On the far side of the stoneworks, the mountains opened up suddenly upon a vista of green fields, blue sky, and snow-capped mountains that took her breath away. The Vale of Arran bathed in the morning light. It stretched before them to a misty east, a tranquil land of rich black soil, wide, slow-moving rivers, and hundreds of small lakes that shone like mirrors in the sun, protected on all sides by its sheltering peaks. Wheat and corn and barley grew high in the fields, and even in high garden the pumpkins were no larger, nor the fruit any sweeter than here. They stood at the western end of the valley, where the high road crested the last pass and began its winding descent to the bottom lands 2 miles below. The Vale was narrow here, no more than half a day's ride across, and the northern mountains seemed so close that Catelyn could almost reach out and touch them. Looming above them all was the jagged peak called the Giant's Lance, a mountain that even mountains looked up to, its head lost in icy mists 3.5 miles above the valley floor. Over its massive western shoulder flowed the ghost torrent of Alyssa's tears. Even from this distance, Catelyn could make out the shining silver thread bright against the dark stone. When her uncle saw that she had stopped, he moved his horse closer and pointed.
"It's there, beside Alyssa's tears. All you can see from here is a flash of white every now and then, if you look hard and the sun hits the walls just right."
7 towers, Ned had told her, like white daggers thrust into the belly of the sky, so high you can stand on the parapets and look down on the clouds. "How long a ride?" she asked.
"We can be at the mountain by evenfall," Uncle Brynden said, "but that climb will take another day."
So Roderick Cassell spoke up from behind.
"My lady," he said, "I fear I can go no further today."
His face sagged beneath the ragged, new-grown whiskers, and he looked so weary, Catelyn feared he might fall off his horse.
"Nor should you," he said. "You have done all I could have asked of you, and 100 times more. My uncle will see me the rest of the way to the Eyrie. Lannister must come with me, but there is no reason that you and the others should not rest here and recover your strength."
"We should be honored to have them to guest," Sir Donald said with the grave courtesy of the young. Besides Sir Roderick, only Bronn, Sir Willis Wode, and Marillion the singer remained of the party that had ridden with her from the inn by the crossroads.
"My lady," Marillion said, riding forward, "I beg you to allow me to accompany you to the Eyrie, to see the end of the tale as I saw its beginnings." The boy sounded haggard, yet strangely determined. He had a fevered shine to his eyes. Catelyn had never asked the singer to ride with him. That choice he had made himself. And how he had come to survive the journey when so many braver men lay dead and unburied behind them, she could never say. Yet here he was, with a scruff of beard that made him look almost a man. Perhaps she owed him something for coming this far. "Very well," she told him.
"I'll come as well," Brunn announced.
She liked that less well. Without Brunn, she would never reach the Vale, she knew. The sellsword was as fierce a fighter as she had ever seen, and his sword had helped cut them through to safety. Yet for all that, Catelyn misliked the man. Courage he had and strength, but there was no kindness in him, and little loyalty, and she had seen him riding beside Lannister far too often, talking in low voices and laughing at some private joke. She would have preferred to separate him from the dwarf, here and now. But having agreed that Marillion might continue to the Eyrie, she could see no gracious way to deny the same right to Bronn. "As you wish," she said, although she noted that he had not actually asked her permission. Sir Willis Wode remained with Sir Roderick, a soft-spoken septant fussing over their wounds. Their horses were left behind as well, poor ragged things. Sir Donald promised to send birds ahead to the Eyrie and the Gates of the Moon with a word of their coming. Fresh mounts were brought forth from the stables, sure-footed mountain stock with shaggy coats, and within the hour they set forth once again. Catelyn rode beside her uncle as they began the descent to the valley floor. Behind them came Bronn, Tyrion Lannister, Marillion, and six of Brynden's men. Not until they were a third of the way down the mountain path, well out of earshot of the others, did Brynden Tully turn to her and say,
"So, child, tell me about this storm of yours."
"I have not been a child in many years, uncle," Catelyn said, but she told him nonetheless. It took longer than she would have believed to tell it all. Lysa's letter and Bran's fall, the assassin's dagger and Littlefinger, and a chance meeting with Tyrion Lannister in the Crossroads Inn. Her uncle listened silently, heavy brows shadowing his eyes as his frown grew deeper. Brynden Tully had always known how to listen, to anyone but her father. He was Lord Huster's brother, younger by 5 years, but the two of them had been at war as far back as Catelyn could remember. During one of their louder quarrels, when Catelyn was 8, Lord Huster had called Brynden
the black goat of the Tully flock.
Laughing, Brynden had pointed out that the sigil of their house was a leaping trout, so he ought to be a black fish rather than a black goat, and from that day forward he had taken it as his personal emblem. The war had not ended until the day she and Lysa had been wed. It was at their wedding feast that Brynden told his brother he was leaving Riverrun to serve Lysa and her new husband, the Lord of the Eyrie. Lord Huster had not spoken his brother's name since, from what Edmure told her in his infrequent letters. Nonetheless, during all those years of Catelyn's girlhood, it had been Brynden the Blackfish to whom Lord Hustler's children had run with their tears and their tails when father was too busy and mother too ill. Catelyn, Lysa, Edmure, and yes, even Petyr Baelish, their father's ward. He had listened to them all patiently as he listened now, laughing at their triumphs and sympathizing with their childish misfortunes. When she was done, her uncle remained silent for a long time as his horse negotiated the steep, rocky trail.
"Your father must be told," he said at last. "If the Lannisters should march, Winterfell is remote, and the Vale walled up behind its mountains. But Riverrun lies right in their path."
I had the same fear, Catelyn admitted. I shall ask Maester Coleman to send a bird when we reach the Eyrie. She had other messages to send as well, the commands that Ned had given her for his bannermen, to ready the defences of the north. What is the mood of the Vale, she asked.
Angry, Brynden Tully admitted. Lord John was much loved, and the insult was keenly felt when the king named Jaime Lannister to an office the Aerons had held for nearly 300 years. Lysa has commanded us to call her son the true warden of the East. But no one is fooled. Nor is your sister alone in wondering at the manner of the Hand's death. None dare say John was murdered, not openly, but suspicion casts a long shadow.
He gave Catelyn a look, his mouth tight.
And there is the boy.
The boy? What of him? She ducked her head as they passed under a low overhang of rock and around a sharp turn.
Her uncle's voice was troubled. Lord Robert, he sighed, 6 years old, sickly, and prone to weep if you take his dolls away. John Aaron's true-born heir by all the gods, yet there are some who say he's too weak to sit his father's seat. Lester Royce has been High Steward this past 14 years, while Lord John served in King's Landing, and many whisper that he should rule until the boy comes of age. Others believe that Lysa must marry again, and soon. Already the suitors gather like crows on a battlefield. The air is full of them.
I might have expected that, Catelyn said. Small wonder there. Lysa was still young, and the kingdom of Mountain and Vale made a handsome wedding gift. Will Lysa take another husband?
She says yes, provided she finds a man who suits her, Brynden Tully said. But she has already rejected Lord Nestor and a dozen other suitable men. She swears that this time she will choose her lord husband.
You, of all people, can scarce falter for that.
Sir Brynden snorted. Nor do I. But it seems to me that Lysa is only playing at courtship. She enjoys the sport. And I believe your sister intends to rule herself until her boy is old enough to be lord of the Eyrie in truth as well as name.
A woman can rule as wisely as a man, Catelyn said.
The right woman can, her uncle said with a sideways glance. Make no mistake, Cat. Lysa is not you.
He hesitated a moment.
If truth be told, I fear you may not find your sister as, helpful as you would like.
She was puzzled. What do you mean?
The Lysa who came back from King's Landing is not the same girl who went south when her husband was named Hand. Those years were hard for her. You must know, Lord Aaron was a dutiful husband, but their marriage was made from politics, not passion.
As was my own.
They began the same, but your ending has been happier than your sister's. Two babes stillborn, twice as many miscarriages, Lord Aaron's death. Catelyn, the gods gave Lysa only one child, and he is all your sister lives for now. Poor boy. Small wonder she fled rather than see him handed over to the Lannisters. Your sister is afraid, child, and the Lannisters are what she fears most. She ran to the Vale, stealing away from the Red Keep like a thief in the night, and all to snatch her son out of the lion's mouth. And now you have brought the lion to her door.
In chains, Catelyn said. A crevasse yawned on her right, falling away into darkness. She reined up her horse and picked her way along step by careful step.
Oh!
Her uncle glanced back to where Tyrion Lannister was making his slow descent behind them.
I see an axe on his saddle, a dirk in his belt, and a sellsword that trails after him like a hungry shadow. Where are the chains, sweet one?
Catelyn shifted uneasily in her seat. The dwarf is here, and not by choice. Chains or no, he is my prisoner. Lysa will want him to answer for his crimes no less than I. It was her own lord husband the Lannisters murdered, and her own letter that first warned us against them.
Brynden Blackfish gave her a weary smile.
"I hope you're right, child," he sighed, in tones that said she was wrong.
The sun was well to the west by the time the slope began to flatten beneath the hooves of their horses. The road widened and grew straight, and for the first time Catlin noticed wildflowers and grasses growing. Once they reached the valley floor, the going was faster, and they made good time, cantering through verdant greenwoods and sleepy little hamlets, past orchards and golden wheat fields, splashing across a dozen sunlit streams. Her uncle sent a standard-bearer ahead of them, a double banner flying from his staff, the moon and falcon of House Aaron on high, and below it his own black fish. Farm wagons and merchants' carts and riders from lesser houses moved aside to let them pass. Even so, it was full dark before they reached the stout castle that stood at the foot of the giant's lance. Torches flickered atop the ramparts, and the horned moon danced upon the dark waters of its moat. The drawbridge was up, and the portcullis down. But Catlin saw lights burning in the gatehouse and spilling from the windows of the square towers beyond.
"The gates of the moon," her uncle said, as the party drew rein. His standard-bearer rode to the edge of the moat to hail the men in the gatehouse. "Lord Nestor's seat. He should be expecting us. Look up." Catlin raised her eyes up and up and up. At first all she saw was stone and trees, the looming mass of the great mountain shrouded in night as black as a starless sky. Then she noticed the glow of distant fires well above them. A tower keep, built upon the steep side of the mountain, its lights like orange eyes staring down from above. Above that was another, higher and more distant, and still higher a third, no more than a flickering spark in the sky. And finally, up where the falcon soared, a flash of white in the moonlight. Vertigo washed over her as she stared upward at the pale towers so far above.
"The Eyrie!"
she heard Marillion murmur, awed. The sharp voice of Tyrion Lannister broke in.
"The Aarons must not be over-fond of company. If you're planning to make us climb that mountain in the dark, I'd rather you kill me here."
"We'll spend the night here and make the ascent on the morrow," Brynden told him.
I can scarcely wait," the dwarf replied. "How do we get up there? I've no experience at riding goats."
"Mules," Brynden said, smiling.
"There are steps carved into the mountain," Catlin said. Ned had told her about them when he talked of his youth here with Robert Baratheon and John Aaron. Her uncle nodded.
"It's far too dark to see them, but the steps are there. Too steep and narrow for horses, but mules can manage them, most of the way. The path is guarded by three way castles, stone and snow and sky. The mules will take us as far up as sky."
Tyrion Lannister glanced up doubtfully.
"And beyond that?"
Brynden smiled. "Beyond that, the path is too steep even for mules. We ascend on foot the rest of the way, or perchance you'd prefer to ride a basket. The Eyrie clings to the mountain directly above sky, and in its cellars are six great winches with long iron chains to draw supplies up from below. If you prefer, my Lord of Lannister, I can arrange for you to ride up with the bread and beer and apples."
The dwarf gave a bark of laughter.
"Oh, would that I were a pumpkin," he said. "Alas, my lord father would no doubt be most chagrined if his son of Lannister went to his fate like a load of turnips. If you ascend on foot, I fear I must do the same. We Lannisters do have a certain pride."
"Pride?" Catlin snapped. His mocking tone and easy manner made her angry. "Arrogance, some might call it. Arrogance and avarice and lust for power."
"My brother is undoubtedly arrogant," Tyrion Lannister replied. "My father is the soul of avarice, and my sweet sister Cersei lusts for power with every waking breath. I, however, am innocent as a little lamb. Shall I bleat for you? He grinned.
The drawbridge came creaking down before she could reply, and they heard the sound of oiled chains as the portcullis was drawn up. Men-at-arms carried burning brands out to light their way, and her uncle led them across the moat. Lord Nestor Royce, High Steward of the Vale and Keeper of the Gates of the Moon, was waiting in the yard to greet them, surrounded by his knights.
"Lady Stark," he said, bowing.
He was a massive, barrel-chested man, and his bow was clumsy. The Catelyn dismounted to stand before him. "Lord Nestor," she said. She knew the man only by reputation. Bronze Yon's cousin, from a lesser branch of House Royce, yet still a formidable lord in his own right. "We have had a long and tiring journey. I would beg the hospitality of your roof tonight, if I might."